Hello, friends, and welcome to the show. You know, 2020 has been a complete dumpster fire if you think about it. Everything you wanted to do this year for initiatives has probably been pushed back. We know here at Boss Builders that training and development is put on hold by many of our customers. And unfortunately, some of your own opportunities for development have been shuttered. Even National SHRM this year has been completely postponed. So I understand that it's hard to think about ways that you can get better. But you know, right now is probably the best time to do some professional and personal development. Our guest today is Dr. Deb Cohen. She's going to talk to us specifically about how to develop ourselves while we're helping others. And as an HR professional, you know that's your challenge. Everybody comes to you for help and development. What are you doing to develop yourself? Deb's going to give you some great techniques and tools and great suggestions on how you can actually get better during this time of pandemic and quarantine. So let's quit talking about Deb. Let's go ahead and talk to her. Let's meet our guest, Dr. Deb Cohen. You know what to do? That personal item's got to go under the seat in front of you. Buckle up. It's time to take off.
Should the cabin lose pressure, oxygen masks will drop from the overhead area. Please place the mask over your own mouth and nose before assisting others.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the HR Oxygen Podcast, the show focused on the overworked, overwhelmed, and underappreciated HR professional. And now, here is the host of our show, the Boss Builder, Mac Monroe.
Deb Cohen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Glad that you're here, too. This particular podcast channel is designed to help empower the overwhelmed, overworked, overstressed, and underappreciated HR professional. And I'm wondering, Deb, can you relate to that in any way?
Absolutely. I worked at SHRM, the Society for Human Resource Management, for about 16 years, and I interacted with HR professionals all the time. We provided a lot of content, we did a lot of research, and held a lot of focus groups, and I can definitely relate to all that HR folks go through because I've sat with them, I've talked to them, I've listened to them. As a professor, I taught HR, and lots of the folks in my classrooms have gone on to be HR professionals, and I still talk with all of them. So I've heard these issues time and time again, and it's partly what has sort of sparked me to write some of the books that I've written specifically for HR professionals.
That's great. You've been in this for a while. I mean, has there been a dedicated path for HR professionals? What I've always seen is that you take someone who started out as an admin assistant, who then began to take on a few other roles because they were highly motivated. And before long, they were doing a lot of paperwork that related to hiring and whatever. And eventually they got awarded the title of, I'm the HR professional. And maybe not even, I mean, my very first assistant, Amy Hennish, ended up like that and became an HR director. Has that always been the path, or now, because you mentioned you had taught HR, is there a different path now that we could take to be in this field?
Absolutely, there is. You know, it's interesting. I think the path that you just described is something that certainly has happened and does happen. And that typically happens in organizations as they grow and they realize, hey, wait a minute, we need somebody to help us with all this, you know, HR stuff. And okay, Deb, you look like a good person. We're going to tap you to do that. But HR as a profession and as a field has been defined actually for quite some time. And you can study HR, you can get an undergraduate degree in HR, you can get a master's degree, a PhD. There are tons of courses that are offered in schools. Now, not every school offers an HR program. You'll typically find it in a business school, although not exclusively, but typically you will find it in a business school because if you're going to be successful in HR, you need to do that in the context of business. You need to have not only HR technical knowledge, but a lot of business application as well. So you can study HR and you can get internships in HR. There's lots of organizations that do that. And here you might see some of the discrepancy between, say, a large organization that has a very deep HR function versus a smaller organization, which has more generalists as opposed to specialists.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a path now. Talk to us about competencies, because I see that word a lot. And generally speaking, I saw it more when I was doing work with people in healthcare, like, you know, nurses have competencies. HR people have competencies too, right?
Oh, most definitely. So I mentioned earlier that I worked for SHRM. One of the things that I'm very proud of in terms of the work that I did there, I hired a team and we created an HR competency model. So there are competencies have had a lot of attention in these last several decades. And HR has its own set of competencies. And we created this model a number of years ago. My first book was called Defining HR Success, where we actually talk about this model. And then just a couple of years ago, I wrote a book called Developing Proficiency in HR, which helps people in HR understand how do they develop their competency to be successful. So let me just take a minute to sort of go through that a little bit. HR competencies are two things, technical expertise and behavioral expertise. On the technical side, that's what I call nuts and bolts. It's really the cost of entry into the field. It's knowing about compensation, employee relations, training, staffing, all of the things that you need to know, including compliance, to be successful in HR. But the other side of that, which I think is as important, in fact, probably more important, is what I would call the behavioral side. These are as critical to acquire over time and to develop through your expertise. So to help sort of distinguish what are the two, technical competencies are what a person can do, whereas behavioral competencies demonstrate how a person performs in their role. So you might say, well, so what does that include? It includes things like communication, business acumen, things like your critical evaluation, your consultation within the organization, ethical practice, leadership, relationship management, all of those things that allow you to do your job more effectively. So if you have that baseline of expertise in HR, it's the way you act as a manager, as a supervisor, as a leader in terms of bringing all of those forces to bear, how you influence the organization from an HR perspective.
Yeah, I can't stress enough that behavioral piece. I mean, I'm guessing you saw this, but I see it, you know, as I go into organizations. For a period of time, I worked in the HR department of a large hospital in Silver Spring, Maryland. And there, it was clearly us and them. The HR department had about 15 people in it, and it was us against them. And it was bitter, and it was ugly. And I don't know how it ever got that way, except that, you know, HR became the fun police.
Yeah.
And it seems like you don't start out this way. It seems like it just gravitates that way. Because when I see a new HR professional starting, it's exciting. It's like we have this new opportunity and they put a bowl of chocolate on their desk and people feel comfortable. And then how does it get from that to HR as the fun police? Where does that transition tend to happen, at least in your experience?
Yeah, I think it's a lack of understanding on both the part of employees and sometimes on the part of HR to recognize that while there has to be compliance and you have to be quote unquote the police in the organization to make sure that all the paperwork is done and continues to get done, there's really a need for this understanding. I spent a long time as a professor teaching HR, most recently at George Washington University, and the greatest joy to me at the end of an MBA class that was an overview of HR was when students would come up to me at the end of the class and say, I had no idea this is what HR was all about. You know, these are folks who were working professionals and, you know, they were the ones that called them the police. And at the end of the semester, if somebody came up and said, now I get it. Now I get why performance management is so important. Now I get why employee relations has to be done. Now I understand the differences in how and why people are paid what they're paid. And I also get how important it is to do behavioral interviewing to make sure that we get the right people in the door in the first place. And so I think that the experience that you had in Maryland is one that is not, unfortunately, uncommon. And, you know, that is a shame, because if you were to step back and say, as an HR professional, if I influence you by helping you understand why I need you to do this paperwork, why it's important to do behavioral interviewing or whatever, you know, choice skill assessments you have that you're using. If I help you understand that this is going to get you a better employee to do their job and that you're going to have less employee relations issues, then my behaviors as an HR professional have led you to be influenced rather than me coming to you and, you know, sort of pointing the finger and said, but you didn't do your paperwork. Mm. It's really about understanding and appreciation of the value of what good HR practices can net an organization and an individual.
Well, the practices will hinge, I'm sure, on the expertise of the HR professionals in them. Is the degree enough, Deb, or, you know, is getting your certification enough? When as an HR professional is your professional development over with? When can you just check that box and get out there and start practicing?
Right. So your professional development is never done. And this is true for HR as well as for, frankly, all other professions. So you might go to school, you might get a degree in HR. Terrific. You come out, you're a newly minted HR professional. You still have a lot to learn. You may have learned what the books say. Now you have to learn how to act within the organization. How do you understand an organization's culture? How do you stay up with the latest things that are happening in HR? I mean, we've got a lot of changes in the last decades. The use of technology within HR is incredible. That doesn't take away the behavioral side of things as to understanding how do you make a good fit between individuals and jobs and managers and in terms of what they want. So you have to continue your HR expertise training, if you will, understanding what's happening new that's out there. But I think a mistake that sometimes HR professionals make, and getting certification is terrific. I would encourage anybody to get certification. And the reason why I think that's important is not because you come out with letters behind your name that says, I know this. It's because certification requires recertification. And recertification requires that you continue to have education. And I'm a firm believer that taking courses, not just in HR expertise issues, but also in management, in leadership, in consultation, in critical evaluation, understanding how to do analysis, all of those kinds of things, understanding cultural awareness, diversity, inclusion, all of those things have to be not just understood, but practiced. You have to have experience with them. And I think that your continuing education includes things not just like courses, but also getting out there and networking and talking to people who have experienced things that you haven't.
Well, that sounds like, number one, a lot of work. And number two, it sounds like it's expensive. How do we work around that? Because you're right. I think you've got to stay sharp.
Yeah. So is it a lot of work? Yes, you could say that. I think if you build it in as my personal and professional development are a way of life for me, or something that I have to do, that it becomes less work and frankly more fun and more interesting. In terms of the expense part, you know, professional development is about having a partnership with you and your organization and with you and your own, you know, personal budget and finance. And that is, so what courses can I take that are free? How can I go to networking events where I am ticking a bunch of boxes at once? I'm developing myself personally. I'm meeting people that can help me in other ways. And I'm also building my network that can help me perhaps long-term as I continue. I always tell people it's not important to network just when you need it. It's important to network all the time, because then when you need to have a network, perhaps you're in transition and you need to move on to another, you know, job. Now you've got a built-in network and you don't have to worry about building it up. So there are things you can do that are for free. There are things that you can partner with your organization. I think you have to take, it's your responsibility to sort of decide where do you want your career to go. And now how do you partner with your organization in terms of how is it best to use your professional development dollars? But frankly, there's many things that you can do that are of no cost or low cost. So if there's an area that you want to develop your skill in, let's say you want to become more global. Your organization is going to be much more involved globally, but you haven't had a lot of experience. Find out some people in your organization who have had global experience and go to them and ask them to be a mentor. Go to them and ask them if you can have lunch periodically so you can pick their brain. You can continue to learn without spending a lot of money. It doesn't have to be just taking a course here or there or taking your time to get an advanced degree. Advanced degrees are terrific, but it's expertise and knowledge and then practicing what you've learned that are key.
No, I think that's great. Now, how is the new dynamic we're in right now? So we're in May of 2020, and for many HR professionals, their organizations have suddenly dispersed. Everybody's working remote. Their role has changed. How does professional development work now that we're in this current situation?
So I think one of the things people can do right now is, first of all, become much more observant of themselves and the people that they're interacting with. Take some time, and you can do this whether it's May 2020 or, you know, May 2021, or even May 2019, as the case may be. Become more observant about what do you know, what don't you know, what are you comfortable with, and what aren't you comfortable with. So in each of my last two books, I've focused a lot on self-assessment. And you don't have to go out and pay for and take expensive assessments. You can do a self-assessment by identifying what are the things that are important to me and to my job and to my future now and perhaps 6 months from now. And then truly be honest and say, and how do I stack up? Am I good at communication? Am I good at delegation? Am I good at internal communication? How am I at relationship management? And truly be honest with yourself about, you know, what your skill level is, what your proficiency level is, and then say, now, where do I need to take this? And how do I need to get there? So you can do these self-assessments. And now, again, is a particularly good time because I think you have, even though you might be doing a lot of remote discussions and having, you know, technological face-to-face meetings, I suspect that people have a lot more time on their own right now than they have in the past. Sit down and write it out. I'll tell you a quick story, if I may. I was out of college maybe a year, and I was working as a manager trainee for a bank. And this was a long time ago. And I was sent as the acting manager to a branch where the manager was out sick for a number of weeks or months. I can't recall. And I found myself incredibly bored because it was a brand new branch. There weren't a lot of customers yet. And I sat behind a desk and I had to be there all day. And I knew that I wasn't happy with what I was doing. I knew I wanted to do something different. So I sat down and over the course of about 5 days, I essentially charted my future. And I wrote down, here are all the things that I think I'm good at. Here are all the things that I like doing. Here are the things that I want to do more of in the future. And I built a plan of, so how am I going to get to these things? And from that, I decided that I wanted to go back to graduate school. I decided I wanted to study management and human resources, which I did in a master's program. And I essentially charted my future. It didn't cost me anything. It just simply took time. Now, people are busy. You might not have all that, you know, focus time. But frankly, I think as this is a time of transition for a lot of folks, spending an investment of your time to write down and think about where am I and where do I want to be? And what are my skill sets is an important thing to do.
No, I think you're right. If you think about the average day of an HR professional, when you're not sitting in endless meetings watching your fingernails grow, you are constantly being interrupted by a knock on your door. And those two things have probably not transitioned well to virtual work. You probably do have more time. And I love the idea of that self-assessment, Deb. If you can use this time to grow, then you will have come out way ahead. I mean, that's one big positive I see from everybody being quarantined.
Absolutely. You know, I would encourage people, I tell people to do some journaling. I mean, we all keep notebooks about, you know, what do I owe to so-and-so? What do I have to do? And what happened at this meeting and that meeting? You know, I encourage folks to have a journal, either a separate journal or a separate section within your notebook, whether it's an electronic notebook or a, you know, pad and paper. Keep some notes about your own personal journey, separate from what it is that's a work issue. Because when you write it down, it gives you the ability to then go back and do some reflection.
Yeah, I think it's great. Well, you know, I do a lot of those HR conferences. We do a lot of speaking at those. And the one thing I always observe is HR professionals, they seem to have the best time at the end of the day, when they can go down to the restaurant, wherever the conference is held, and they have several glasses of wine and they get loud. That's where I get a lot of my interesting HR stories from. But it seems like people also go to these conferences, not just for sharing information and resources, but they seem like they just need each other. Is that community important for them to have?
I think it's very important. And I think it's important to build that community. So there's the networking aspect of it, but then there's what I call the learning aspect of it. The more people that you have met, the more people you have to draw on to ask questions, to offer help, to connect and to partner. So partner not just with your organization, but partner with somebody who maybe is in your industry, who is dealing with some of the same issues that you are, or partner with somebody who is a specialist in HR and with whom you can have good conversations. Be purposeful in those connections. So yes, it's great to go and have a couple glasses of wine and release and have some fun, but also be thoughtful about how you're connecting with people and who you're connecting with, and think about how you can help each other through these difficult times, whether it's a difficult time like we have now, or just a difficult time in your organization, which might at some point be in transition, either upsizing or downsizing.
Now, aside from the journal and the thing that you did as you started plotting your course, are there any other tools HR professionals might be able to use as they're thinking about their own development?
Absolutely. One of the other things that I highly recommend to folks is role playing. I think role playing is incredibly important because, you know, I know you and I have talked about things like difficult conversations before, but when you role play about your career and your future, or you role play about an issue or a problem. Let's say you're looking for some more budget money so that you can buy some software that or a platform that's important, or you're looking for budget money for development of your other employees within the organization to create, say, a leadership program. The more you can role play, and having somebody who understands where you're coming from is helpful. And think through, what do I want to say? How do I want to say it? And how am I going to react to somebody who's asking me a question that I hadn't thought about? So if you're going to do role playing, you can certainly do it on your own, but it's better, of course, if you've got a scenario that you know is coming up, to do it with somebody. So one example that I like to use with folks is budget. You know, you do your budget every year and you have to justify, why do I want this, let's call it $100,000? And how am I going to use that $100,000? And you've got a CFO or some other finance person saying, well, we really need to cut the budget, so can you do with 10% less? You've got to have the ability to say, and this calls on your behavioral competencies, your business acumen, your consultation, your critical evaluation. And frankly, I think role-playing to say, you know what? I understand that you think we can do with 10% less, but here's why we can't. Here's what the data says. Here's what the implications are. Here's what the outcome will be if we have that $100,000. And here's what the outcomes will be if we don't have that $100,000. So that role play allows you to be thoughtful. It allows you to be purposeful. And it allows you to be very specific and data-driven and analytical, which is what lots of folks in business want you to do today, whether you're in HR, finance, marketing, strategy, sales, manufacturing, no matter where you are in the organization, being analytical and clear and fact-driven and evidence-driven is incredibly important.
What about observation as a way to develop skills as an HR professional?
Yeah, so I think observation is something that we do it all the time. The question is, how thoughtful and purposeful are you with that observation? So it's a little bit like keeping a journal. One of the things that I like to do when I'm in a meeting is I like to write down my observations. I take notes about, you know, what's happening in the meeting and what's critically important. But I might make some notes to myself that says, you know, gee, Deb seemed kind of disengaged about this. Or as I looked around the room, there were furrowed brows on this point. Observe things that you can go back and address. So maybe after a meeting, I come back and I say to Deb, you know, gosh, you seemed a little bit unclear about the conversation. Can we talk through that? Going to somebody and say, you know, your body language in that meeting was a little bit disconcerting. What concerns do you have? How can we address that? So the point about observation is that we have to notice what is being said, how it's being said, people's body language. We also have to notice, you know, how do we interact with people? Are there managers who you get along with really well and you just have a great rapport? And then when you have somebody who you don't have that great rapport with, try to be observational in terms of, so what's the problem? Why don't I get along as well with, you know, Deb as I do with Steve or vice versa? Think through and observe our own attitudes, our own behaviors, as well as others. And I think we can do that in a more structured way. I've suggested to some people when they've had, you know, particularly difficult situations to create an actual observation sheet that they use so that it's structured and it's detailed. And they take this into a meeting or they do it after the meeting where they actually write it down. And in, you know, a few weeks' time or a few months' time, you can go back and you can see the patterns. And patterns can help you to figure out, what am I doing effectively and what am I maybe not doing effectively?
But does that work in our current dynamic where pretty much everything we do is going to be not physically face to face?
I think it does, because again, you know, you've got some technological solutions, but let's say it's just emails all the time. You can observe how somebody is talking in an email. Are they using all caps? Did they take the time to capitalize the first letter of the sentence? Are they short? Are they long? Are they well-written, not well-written? Do they come at the beginning of the day, at the end of the day? You could. There are lots of things that you can observe, both remotely in terms of things like emails or even phone calls. You know, what time does the phone call come in? How does the person answer the phone? Many things that you can observe without being face-to-face. Observation is it's behavioral, certainly at the heart of it, is in terms of what you're looking at. But it has lots and lots of legs to it in terms of how you do it.
Well, it sounds like one of the key skills is just really paying attention, having the technical skills, the behavioral skills, and then the third piece is just paying attention, right?
I agree 100%. And being structured about it. So you can pay attention, but if you're less structured, it's not going to be as meaningful. The more structured you are, the better you are able to pick out common themes and pieces of information that are going to be helpful to you.
Well, just one last question here for you, Deb, as we wind down. You've made a very strong case for HR professionals taking the time to invest in themselves. So as a person's getting ready to do that, how can they do it without shorting their organization, without shorting their personal life? Because it sounds like this is something that's going to take a lot of time. How can they balance all this out and still be effective in all their different roles?
Sure. I think, you know, I call this self-directed learning. And I think self-directed learning is something that you weave into your job and your life. So do you need to take some extra effort? Sure. I mean, anything that's important is going to have to take effort. But I think you weave it in. So be self-directed in your observation, in your role plays, but do it in the context of your job and in the context of your life. Have conversations with friends about substantive things, not just about the movies that you go to. And again, in the course of your job, you can certainly be thoughtful and observational, and you can encourage great interactions and helpfulness within your peer group, both within your organization and outside your organization. So I think at the end of the day, if you improve yourself through self-directed learning, through the things that we've talked about, like networking and observations and thoughtful questions and role play, you are actually helping your organization and helping yourself. So you're doing two things that are both important. You're focusing on you, but you're also focusing on it in a context that is helpful to your career and to your organization. I don't think the two are separate. I think you blend them together.
Okay, good. Well, let's talk about some directed learning then. Deb, tell us about your books. Tell us how we find those books. Tell us about your coaching and tell us how we can reach out to you for some directed help.
Well, great. Thank you so much. First of all, you can find me on my website, which is www.debcohenllc.com. That's debcohenllc.com. You can catch me at the same email, which is debcohenllc@gmail.com. You can certainly call me on my business line, 703-992-9817. All of my books are available on Amazon. You can also find them in the Sherm bookstore. The recent book that I wrote was Developing Managerial Proficiency, which just came out a few months ago. And my two books that are specific on HR, Developing Proficiency in HR, 7 Self-Directed Learning Activities, and Defining HR Success, 9 Critical Competencies. You can find those on my website. You can find them in Amazon, and you can find them in the Sherm bookstore as well.
That's great. And you can also listen to Boss Builder Podcast episode number 81, where Deb and I talk about how to deal with difficult conversations, right?
Terrific. Yes.
Awesome. Deb, thank you for taking time out of your schedule to chat with, I think, the most valuable part of any organization, and the one that I think, if given the time and space, can absolutely turn around an organization for the better. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the HR Oxygen Podcast. We hope you found something today that will relieve your stress, feed your soul, and pump you up to face another day.
At Boss Builders, we want to let you know that we appreciate the hard work you do every day as an HR professional. And, as a reminder, always make sure to adjust your own oxygen mask before attempting to help those around you. Be well.